From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of October 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will join us closer to the bottom of our program. He'll discuss the agricultural cash grain market. And along the way, we'll catch up on the weather forecast with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago and Brenna Ellison from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences will join us. She surveyed about 1,000 folks around the nation on how they have been using groceries and getting food in general and whether that's changed very much. And we'll hear all about that during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today, 3 cents lower, finished at $3.98.5. The March at 401.5, down 2.75, and May corn two lower, 403.25. The settlement price next year's December at 383.75, up a penny for the day. November beans down 5.5 cents, settled $10.51.75. January at 10.50.5, 4.25 lower, and the July soybeans at 10.34.75, down 0.5 cent. Next year's November at 9.65.25, a quarter higher. Bean oil a few futures down 36 cents at 33.06, the bean meal at 376.90, up 20 cents for the day. Live cattle futures nearby October at 106.27.5, 42.5 higher. December at 107.97.5, up 3.30 for the day. Feeder cattle in the October at 136.45, $1.27.5 higher. And lean hogs in the December at $65.62.5, down 75 cents. Wheat futures soft red, July contract at 5.93, down 4.75. The hard red, 3/4 lower at $5.59.5. Crude oil futures down about a dollar for the day at $36.33 a barrel. Ethanol futures at $1.53, 6 cents higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.09.2, 2 cents higher, rather lower for the afternoon. Gasoline on the RBOB down about 2.5 cents at $1.05. And natural gas, penny and 3 cents higher at $3.30.5. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to help us take a look at the marketplace. Hey, thanks for being with us, Dan. Let's start with yesterday. What'd you think of that move in the soybeans?
Well, I think the first thing, I mean, of course, it got everybody's attention was yesterday's steep decline. The market was overdue for something like that. It had been grinding higher under overbought technical conditions for several days. So it was just a matter of time. Something came along to flip the switch so you would get some long profit taking, long liquidation, new selling from the short side. The guys that were wanting to get in there on the short side because it was overbought. And fundamentally, they've been using the reason that the stock market was in decline because of increased coronavirus cases and blah, 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 blah. But technically, it was ready for something. It was just a matter of what kind of reason you want to put with it. And as you know, following the markets, there is really nobody really knows what the reason is. All it is a bunch of guesses what the reason, why the market did what it did, because a lot of that stuff has already worked into the market before it's actually reflected into prices. So, but the market today, we're still down, but we're more moderate losses. It's kind of volume has kind of slowed up a little bit. Looking at some of my short-term cyclical work, it implies that maybe this correction or it could turn into a period of consolidation here after another day or so, that we kind of got weakness going into maybe early next week. Beans and corn has a little different timing. One wants to buy them on election day on Tuesday. The other one wants to buy them the day after. So they're all in that three-day window for a short-term bottom. And then we'll have then we'll try to rally the rest of next week, and we'll see where we go from there. But for those that have been following us all along knows that I've been kind of looking at this time frame from September 15th to the first part of November as a window that you had to be awful careful about and looking for a major high in the marketplace. And once that high is in place, I would, it's not going to go straight down. We're going to have some ups and downs in it. But I look for it to go on down into a winter spring low. So I do think this is an important high to be a seller in. Just like anything else, when you talk about the future, no one knows what's ahead of us. For those that want to, you know, part with inventory, they could maybe go buy a call option of some kind, and then they would be in position to take advantage if South America would get into a weather issue and or next spring or next summer. But my cyclical work would indicate that once this top is in place, we're going to slowly decline on into a winter spring type low, and then we'll gear up for some kind of summer fall rally next year. So I've been in the kind of the selling mode. I would say percentage-wise, we're probably reaching the point where we probably got a 70% chance that the fall highs are in place, 30% chance that we could still come back and make a higher high. The thing that worries me the most about this week's action is we did make higher highs on Monday. Like we took out last Friday's highs or last week's highs, and now we are lower for the week. So we are in position to close out corn and soybeans with weekly reversals to the downside. Now, it's not an outside down so far. It's just a, you know, a higher high and a lower close, which is still on the negative side of the equation. I don't like to fight those, but I do look at the short-term indicators. And, you know, like I said, I think we've got into early next week for the market to kind of work off that overbought technical condition and then maybe get in position to try to attempt a recovery. And that'll be the recovery that everybody will have to be watching, because if we don't have enough gas to go up and challenge the highs that we made early this week, then that market then would really be ripe for a pretty steep correction as we go on in toward the end of November. So it's starting to get real tricky in here about hanging on to inventory. So I'm pretty well where I'm at. Inventory needs to be protected. You can kind of pick your own way of protecting it through puts, minimum price contracts, or outright selling, maybe buying a call option out of the money if you want to kind of be hooked on if something happens later. But that's kind of where I'm at for at least right now for the next month or two, because I think once this high is in place, the markets are going to struggle as we go on into the winter and early spring months.
Well, that's pretty darn clear.
It's going to be any clear, and it'll be clear if I'm wrong, too.
Yes, it will. But that's okay. That's why we pay you the big bucks, Dan.
Yeah, big buck.
So I get it. There'll be a lot of folks out there with in charges, maybe not so much for soybeans, certainly for corn, but you're willing to move all of that, right?
Well, I mean,
or a large bulk of it.
Corn is not very attractive, especially after the break that we've had. Corn really never got real attractive, but beans were very attractive compared to what I understand some market advisory services and even grain companies, I understand, were advising people to sell November beans at $8.50. Well, they've missed it by $2, you know, so even the hotshot pros have missed it by $2. And then there was a lot of $9 beans talking around to my elevator friends. A lot of people sold some $9 beans. And if they got caught in that bearishness of selling $8.50 and $9 beans, then they probably weren't too enthused about selling $10 beans because they're looking at trying to raise their average. So they're wanting to kind of make sure they hit the high. But I'm surprised how many $8.50 beans were sold out in the country this year. So those advisors need to.
Yeah, personally, I have sales in 8, 9, and 10.
So. You should be fired. You should be fired for selling those $8 beans.
I should.
You
correct.
Should fire yourself for selling $8 beans.
You know, Paul Cooley would give me a C on
a
that.
C?
One,
a
saying.
C? I'll give
maybe a D.
I'll give you a D minus on that one. I'll just flunk you. Do the course over again.
Oh, that's the way it is. Hey, thank you. And we'll talk with you again next week about this, okay?
Okay, very well, Todd.
That's Dan Zwicker. He is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. You know, early on in the pandemic, we had some food supply chain issues, and people have changed their habits as it relates to eating. The University of Illinois agricultural economist wondered just how that was taking place, so they did a nationwide survey. Brenna Ellison is here to talk about that. Thank you so much for being with us. I assume people are still shopping at stores. Can you tell me about the survey and what it found?
Right. So what we found is actually, so we asked people if they had performed each of these activities in the last 2 weeks. And so when our survey was done in mid-September, this would have been asking about the first 2 weeks of September. And what we found is that out of 1,000 consumers, 91% were still reporting grocery shopping in person in the last 2 weeks. So this very much tracks with, you know, this is an essential activity for households that people really aren't willing to give up shopping for groceries in person.
What else did they do?
The other thing they did most often was ordering takeout from a restaurant. So we saw 63.5% of people reported ordering takeout from a restaurant in the last 2 weeks. Things that were less common were eating at a restaurant sitting indoors, eating at a restaurant sitting outdoors, and shopping for groceries online. For each of those, about a third of people reported doing them in the last 2 weeks.
And anything that was at the bottom of the list?
Yeah, so going to farmers markets, using a meal kit service, and visiting a food bank, those in general just were less likely, consumers were less likely to engage in those food acquisition activities.
Did it vary by region because you did the survey nationwide?
Right. So we looked at four census regions based on how the census does it. It's the West, Midwest, South, and Northeast. And what we found is the most variation occurs in restaurant dining behavior. So we actually found that when we talk about eating at a restaurant and sitting indoors, a higher proportion of people in the Midwest and South reported doing this behavior relative to other regions. But I would say that overall, again, not very many people reported doing this. And then when it came to eating at a restaurant and sitting outdoors, we saw the largest share of people in the Northeast region reporting doing this in the past 2 weeks. And so some of this could be weather dependent. In the Midwest and South in September, it can still be really warm, which might push people to eat indoors at a restaurant. Whereas in the Northeast, temperatures may have been cooling off and people might have actually preferred to eat outdoors. And also just the COVID-19 rates that we're observing in the Northeast, they have been lower relative to other parts of the country. So people might have felt more comfortable eating outdoors at restaurants during those 2 weeks.
Did you ask political affiliations and did that make much of a difference in how the survey divvies up?
We did ask about political affiliation. People self-identified as Republican, Democrat, Independent. We also gave options of other or no preference. Not very many people chose those, so we grouped them in with Independents. And again, when we look at the different activities, what we find is it all comes down to how people are eating in restaurants. And so what we find in general is that people who self-identified as Republican were more likely to say they have eaten at a restaurant and sat indoors or eaten at a restaurant and sat outdoors in the last 2 weeks. So they had higher shares than both Democrats and independents. And this trend held across all four geographic regions. So this was definitely a nationwide trend that Republicans were more likely to engage in these activities. But again, I would just say that overall, eating at restaurants was not a highly popular activity relative to grocery shopping in person or getting takeout.
Any major takeaways from the survey for you?
The big takeaway for me is that, in general, consumers are following public health guidance and they're sticking to essential activities like grocery shopping and limiting maybe what's viewed as more non-essential, like going out and eating in restaurants. They are still supporting the restaurant industry ordering takeout, but our impression is that it's probably at a lower frequency than what they were doing before the COVID-19 pandemic.
You can find the survey results and read more from Brenna Ellison on this topic online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It's part of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's check the weather forecast on this Thursday with Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Great being here, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Let's start in South America. Rainfall in Brazil. I think there has been some, enough to make a bit of a difference there or not?
Well, it's certainly enough to get them planting, and we've seen some of these planting numbers improve lately. And there's quite a bit of rain coming up to the northern half of the soybean belt. So that region is going to turn wetter as we move forward. The southern areas are not going to receive all that much rain. There are a few showers moving through as we speak, but those will exit. And then we don't look for any meaningful rain chances until about 10 to 14 days from now. You need to keep in mind that this region averages over 3 inches of rain every 2 weeks in November. So to be seeing an upcoming period with little to no rain falling, and on top of that, it's still been pretty dry over the last 30 to 40 days. This just tells us that agricultural drought is still in place, and that even though things might be improved a bit for planting, you're going to need to see a lot of rain at some point. And we don't see that happening over the first third of November. In Argentina, it's not going to rain very much either, and this area is not quite as wet as in Brazil in November, but they still get decent rainfall. So to see the next 10 days with very little to none coming up is unusual, though it did rain about 3 or 4 days ago. Once you add all this up, we think the main point to take away is that even though conditions have improved for corn and soybeans in South America, this is not an ideal weather pattern. And unless something changes in the middle or latter part of November, this will still be a story throughout the next few weeks. So we need to keep on watching it.
On the note of rain and drought, different crop though, wheat, does that continue to be a problem both here in the United States and in parts of the former Soviet Union, meaning Russia, Ukraine, some of the stands?
Well, parts of the U.S. saw good rainfall over the last several days. And so that's improved conditions in parts of Oklahoma, Texas, as well as Kansas. The only thing that's a little bit unusual that we need to keep in mind is that we went through a historic cold wave right before the rain, and even snow fell with that event. Many areas were below freezing for up to 48 consecutive hours, including low temperatures in the negatives in parts of Nebraska and Colorado. So that was pretty unbelievable to be seeing that in October. So whether or not that played a role in any injury to wheat will remain to be seen. The other thing to keep in mind is that even though we did see some good rainfall, as we just talked about, it didn't affect everybody. The northwest half of Kansas and southern Nebraska pretty much missed out on all of it. And even though parts of Colorado saw some rain and snow, it certainly wasn't enough to wipe out agricultural drought. We're now moving into a dry period. We're not going to see any rain or snow for at least 10 days. And interestingly enough, these same areas that had temperatures in the minus zeros not all that long ago will have high temperatures in the 70s and 80s next week. So talk about a massive change in temperatures. But again, there's not really any rain on the horizon until maybe 10 to 14 days from now. But even that isn't much of a shot of rain. You also asked about Russia. Well, Russia still has the same drought that we've been talking about for the last several months now. And they haven't seen too much rain, even though they saw a little bit, but drought is still in place. It's kind of the same story in Turkey and in eastern Ukraine. There is an upper-level system that's going to move through over the next 5 days. that will bring some rain to parts of these wheat areas. The main uncertainty regards coverages and amounts. We can see pretty easily that most of these areas will see at least a quarter of an inch of rain. If things really worked out well, they could see up to an inch of rain, which would be a lot for this time of the year and would help take some of the pressure off of the drought conditions. But more than likely, we're going to end up in between the two extremes. We won't end up with a drought-busting rain. We won't end up completely dry. It's now going to be November when this rain is falling, and typically the crop starts to turn dormant about now. So we'll have to see how that one pans out, but they'll see a little bit of rain coming up. Whether or not it changes the big picture probably won't be known until later on in November, and maybe not even until the spring once we start to break dormancy.
Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Always a great time talking with you.
Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. You can find more from him at tstorm.net. Now at agmarket.net, you can find Matt Bennett and his colleagues. Matt, in fact, is on the phone line with us this afternoon from the farm there in Windsor, Illinois, to talk about the cash grain situation. Matt, thanks for being with us. First, why don't you tell me your thoughts about yesterday's break in the soybean market, what that means, if anything.
We've been seeing this weather kind of change in South America of late. The market's extremely overbought, you know, well over $2 rally. And you come in here and you break the market 25 cents or so. It wasn't a shock to me whatsoever. The interesting thing, yesterday, the front months went down the hardest, which would make the most sense because we've had an inverse in the market. You come in here today and you see the same kind of thing going on. Nov and Jan are down, you know, 3.5 to 4 cents as we talk, whereas, you know, some of your deferred months are actually a little bit higher. And so I think part of the reason for that, again, is that we'd risen so sharply on the front months, built a huge inverse in the market, and now you're seeing maybe just a touch of that unwinding. I think if the market was to go down much, that's exactly what you'd see continue. But at this stage of the game, I'm not sure we're going to, you know, go down sharply from here.
Producers, I know some have been holding on saying, hey, I can get more out of this. Is that a good idea?
No, probably not. Here's the thing. You've gone up $2, okay, and you've gone up $1 in corn. Yeah, you're 20 cents off the high in corn. You know, the bean market's 30, 40 cents off the high. With that being said, given where we came from, we're in so much better shape that, to me, I really struggle, to be in a situation where I'm just continuing to ask for more. And so, I think as a producer, you know, selling cash makes a heck of a lot of sense, especially, you know, both corn and beans, the way that they're set up, the market's begging guys and gals to go ahead and sell, what they're harvesting right now or even what they've got on hand. And so you got to be careful, is to get bullish whenever the rally shows up that you were waiting for all along.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
No, I just think risk management's key, profitability's key, and run the numbers, whether it's old crop or new crop. Make sure that you're staying on top of it.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.